what's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill. So recently in the United States, I feel like there's been a lot of discussion around privacy, especially involving like social media apps and things like that. And just in general, also because our government is really on some other shit right now. Recently, Trump announced plans to ban TikTok in the United States.
Now to President Trump's threat to ban TikTok, the widely popular but Chinese-owned video sharing app, out of fear that the link to China poses a security risk.
The news of the TikTok ban made me start thinking about privacy on social media apps, because the whole thing about TikTok was that TikTok apparently steals a lot of your personal information from your phone, and technically they're allowed to do that because when you sign up for the app, you accept their terms and conditions, and I guess within the terms and conditions, it must say like, hey, we can access literally whatever we want to, which then made me think about all the terms and services agreements that we've all signed and we probably have not read. I remember when I was younger and I first started using the internet, how old was I when I first started using the internet? Oh Lord, way too damn young. But anyway, when I first started getting on the internet, I used to try to like read all the terms and conditions, because if there's one thing that my parents taught me, you never sign something before reading it. No matter what it is, you always, always, always read things before you sign them. I could be in a store, there could be a long line behind me, and I'd be like, look, y'all better buckle up and wait, because I'm reading this whole contract before I sign it. But terms and services agreements are different on websites. It's like really, really small font. It's super, super long. And a lot of times it's just kind of like, oh, whatever. It's no big deal. Like, I want to use the app, so let me just agree and keep it pushing. Anyway, all that's to say that this episode's documentary explores that idea, and it's called Terms and Conditions May Apply. And it's all about the terms and conditions that we sign before using different social media apps, websites, online shopping, everything we do digitally. And it's also just about the world of privacy on the internet.
Just about every time we use the internet, a communication link, or an app, we agree to some very long terms and conditions. But what exactly are we agreeing to?
Now, the crazy thing about this doc is that it came out in like 2013, and that was 7 years ago. And they tried to warn us, and we straight up did not listen. And I remember watching it. And when you watch things, you know, back then, you kind of assume, oh, in the future, like, I'm sure it won't actually be like that. And it's 2020, and look at this year. Look at what's going on. So the documentary starts out making all these comparisons. They have this weird, like, animation sequence in the beginning, which feels kind of like a commercial, but it's supposed to compare what it's like when you sign agreements in real life, like at the doctor's office or something, to when you sign agreements digitally. And what they're trying to show you is that when you sign these terms and conditions online, you're really allowing a lot of companies to do a lot of stuff with your data. One thing that they touch on a little bit, but is even more important now in 2020, is your data is so valuable, because companies want that information, your shopping habits, your patterns, like what websites you visit, what things you like, what things you don't like. They want that information to know what to sell you.
There are companies that you've never heard of, like Axiom, that claim to have about 1,500 points of data on the average American citizen. Everything from whether you're right-handed or left-handed, what kind of dog you have, what your sort of psychological outlook is, all of that can be used to inform decisions that businesses make about us as well.
So when you get targeted ads on apps, a lot of times the reason they're so accurate is because they know what you want. In the episode that I did on the documentary, The Great Hack, one thing that they talked about was that a lot of these companies claim your phone isn't necessarily listening to you, but that the algorithm is so good at predicting what you might want to buy that it knows you better than you know yourself. These kinds of principles all relate back to the terms and conditions you sign when you use all these different websites, all these different apps, and you go all these different places. You've basically signed your data away to these people for them to then come back and sell you some shit. So the doc talks about how terms and conditions started in the late 90s with a lot of online ordering places like food delivery services and stuff, adding them to things so people could like order stuff online more quickly. And they talked to an expert who was like, yeah, you know, if I wanted to make like a crazy contract and I didn't want someone to read it, I would just make the font really, really small. He said a lot of times the font is in all caps because that makes somebody, it just like turns into kind of like a texture rather than actual words. You're not really looking at the differences in letters and capitalization or anything like that. You just see like a blurb and you're just kind of like, bleh, and then you don't read it. One important note they had about the history of terms and conditions and a turning point in the development of them was that Google had made like a really big change in their terms and conditions. So in like 2000, I believe, 1999, 2000, Google in their terms and conditions had said basically that they won't turn your information over to anyone, that you're completely anonymous, that Google has no way to tell who is Googling what. And we know now that that is absolutely not true. You can use all the incognito browsing you want to, but if they really, really need to, they can look up your Google searches. They can. But then they made the change in their terms and conditions that was like, you're anonymous, but if we have to hand your information over to somebody, we can.
It's important to note the fundamental difference between these two policies. One says that you're totally anonymous. The other says, when necessary, you're not.
And that slight change basically marked a shift in how we use the internet. And that shift being that companies can access your personal information, and you are basically agreeing to that. Now, in general, most social media sites have written in their terms and conditions that they own your content. So that's something that people really, really, really need to be way more mindful of when they're using these websites. One thing that they brought up is that we all assume Google is free, but the price that we pay to use Google, to go to google.com and to look up whatever question we may have, is that we give them our data, our browsing history, we give them our search results. If you have a Gmail account, they have access to your emails if they really wanted to. What else? Google Docs, they have access to your documents. You know, like, nothing that you do online, nothing you do digitally is really and truly 100% private, which is why you really, really need to be mindful of, look, I know this sounds crazy, but things that I genuinely do not want anyone to know, I do not type them. They're never, ever, ever, ever typed. They're always written down on paper because that's the only way that you can truly guarantee your own privacy. One stat that they brought up is that if you were to actually read all the terms and conditions for the average number of apps and websites people go on, and this is in 2013, you would spend 180 hours out of a year reading them. 180 hours. That is how long these terms and conditions are. And because they're so damn long, like, you know, they could literally just put whatever in it. There was a British gaming website or online store, GameStation, and for a day they had a contract. Their terms and conditions said that they would take people's immortal souls. A ton of people, not having read the terms and conditions, agreed to it, and that's what it said in there.
For one day, their terms stated, by placing an order via this website, you agree to grant us a non-transferable option to claim, now and forevermore, your immortal soul. The contract was only live for a day, but GameStation happened to rake in the lives of 7,000 immortal souls.
Now, a really big turning point in internet privacy and security, at least for Americans, was the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act was passed 45 days after 9/11. It was under the guise of making sure that Americans could be safer.
The USA Patriot Act is a 10-letter acronym for the Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism Act. Though it was intended to prevent terrorist attacks, it has been accused of infringing on basic American civil liberties. It allows any law enforcement officials to skirt a U.S. citizen's Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable search and seizure.
So they were, like, basically spying on Americans and monitoring your phone calls, your emails, your bank information, credit card statements, stuff like that. Basically spying on people. And they were saying, you know, we're trying to catch these terrorists, da 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 da. Now, if you know anything about the, quote, war on terror and America following 9/11, a lot of that was turned out to be misplaced anger towards, you know, brown people, specifically in the Muslim community. It just turned into, like, the government attacking and targeting people who, quote, looked like terrorists. That in the days following 9/11, tensions were so high, and this was passed, which basically gave the government access to all Americans' personal information. Now, yes, sure, sometimes the government does need to know what's going on to potentially stop a threat. But a lot of times, as I talked about in the documentary, that ended up not being what was happening. And it ended up that there were just ordinary citizens being spied on, being abused by their government under the guise of national security. The reason this was a turning point was because it allowed the government to later go to a lot of social media platforms and go to a lot of websites and say, well, you know, we need national security, so we're just gonna, like, dig into this and kind of look into this. The Patriot Act changed how we looked at privacy as a nation. And so that obviously spilled into the internet, because as the Patriot Act was coming to be, the internet was also coming to be. And so they kind of came to together at the same time to converge. And now we have a situation where if the government really, really wants to check your records or do whatever, they can. They really, really can. And they definitely monitor that kind of thing.
Patriot Act expanded the ability of the federal government to do surveillance in a lot of little ways. You don't need a judge's approval, for instance, to find out what website someone visited, what search terms they typed into Google.
Under George Bush, he authorized the National Security Agency, aka the NSA, to be able to do wiretaps on people's phones. They had all of these different things that they kept trying to do. I know in, like, 2002, they started the Information Awareness Office. It was Total Information Awareness. All of these, like, buzzwords, I don't even know what it was called.
Total Information Awareness, a program initiated by the government in January of 2002. Its mission, to collect every digital transmission imaginable.
They're like linking bank information to like flight searches to your online activity and ended up getting shut down in part because the logo was so fucking scary looking and it looked like some Illuminati shit. And people were like, hey, are you guys spying on us? And they were like, no. So they shut that down, but the NSA still definitely does wiretaps. There were a lot of whistleblowers who came out to talk about, yeah, like they listen to your phone conversations.
Defenders still say, oh, we're just intercepting international communications. No domestic communications were affected. I'm taking you don't buy that in the slightest.
And no, that statement is not true. It involves millions of communications, a lot of it domestic communications.
And AT&T ended up making headlines for working with the NSA, doing those wiretaps and giving people's phone information out to the government. People are always joking about like the FBI agent monitoring my calls, da 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 da. Look, that's why you don't talk about things on the phone that you don't talk about certain things on the phone. You just don't, because you just do not know. And I know it sounds crazy, but this is like some cold, hard evidence that these whistleblowers gave of like, yeah, they're wiretapping our phones. Now, this almost always became national news. Like everyone knows it's happening, but you know, no one was really lobbying for it to stop enough that it, and you know, look at us now, we have much bigger fish to fry. And so now this is just kind of like embedded in our society. I know in England, they have a lot of cameras. They have a lot of stuff that are surveilling people, but I think the United States is very unique in that we are very different from all of these other countries. Our government, if the government has access to your information, it's all fun and games until the government is one that you don't necessarily agree with, or until it's an authoritarian government, or you know what I mean? Or until the government is using your information against you. One really, really eerie thing that they brought up in this documentary that was in 2013 that is relevant now is that they basically were saying that the government could use information on protesters who they arrested at different, you know, actions. They could retroactively go back into their search information, go back to their conversations, see who they spoke to, see what they were looking up, to see what led them to go to this protest. And, you know, it's easy to use that to be like, oh, well, if terrorists do something, then we can just look at their search information. But as we are seeing right now in 2020, that same concept can be applied to Black Lives Matter protesters and activists and people who are genuinely pushing for real concrete change in this country. It can be very, very easy for the government to go back and look at your search history and say, oh, okay, well, I didn't like when you said that. Or go back and look at your social media and be like, I didn't like when you said that. We went from there in 2013 to like, God knows what's happening in 2020, which is why this documentary is still relevant and it always will be. One of the biggest helpers to these government organizations are social media apps. People are literally just willingly giving out all of this information. They have just a Rolodex of everyone in the world, really, because most people at least have a Facebook account.
The FBIs and the NSAs of the world are appreciative of the fact that Google and Facebook, you know, have built business models around collecting user data because it makes their jobs much easier.
And, you know, when you're on social media, you kind of don't realize what types of things you're putting out there that can be used against you. This was also talked about in The Great Hack. So I really recommend, if you haven't listened to that episode, please give it a listen. They were talking about how on Facebook, especially, you know, when you do personality quizzes, things like that, that gives out personal information. I had to stop doing those things that were like, see how well your friends know you. And it literally asks like, what's your middle name? What's the street you first lived on? Shit like that. Like perfect information for someone to go in and be like, okay, check that off, add that to her file, da 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 da. There's hella people out here writing statuses that are like, this is where I am right now. This is what I believe in. People going on full-on rants on Facebook, really showing their ass, to be honest with you, on social media, as if Facebook can't come in and shut that shit down. As if Facebook don't have access to all your messages. As if the CIA, if they really wanted to, because they've said before that they would love to, if they couldn't just go in and look at all your statuses and determine something about you that may not necessarily be true. The government uses people's social media to stop people from doing things all the time. One was this Irish man, and he had this tweet. He was like tweeting back and forth to his friend, and he was like something like, can't wait to destroy America with you, XX. Kisses. And when he was going on a trip to the US, and by his destroy America, he meant like get drunk, party, whatever. When he landed in LA, they pulled him aside and they were like, what did you mean by this tweet? Because they took it literally. There was also a seventh grader who tweeted something like, Obama needs to watch out now that he's on his second term, blah, blah, blah. Something very, very innocent. And they misinterpreted that as like, this seventh grader is threatening to kill Obama. But that is just to show how certain things get flagged. So it's that kind of lack of context when it comes to searching your social media and stuff like that, that often makes things happen. Besides Google changing their terms and conditions to basically give all your information out, Facebook is like the number one culprit of this, because Facebook, basically their default settings, makes all of your information public. A lot of older people can't figure out how to go in and change their settings to make it private. I can tell you right now that my Facebook settings are locked down because I do not want anyone seeing anything about me. And I also don't friend people who I don't know. I don't know why people do that, but whatever. But Facebook has all your information, and people have pressed Mark Zuckerberg many, 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 many times for the lack of protection for Facebook's users.
In 2009, Facebook made changes to their privacy policy without telling anyone.
Decided that these would be the social norms now, and we just went for it.
Over the course of a night, Facebook turned what was once private information into totally public information.
Now, one thing that people do often say is that you have to remember that Facebook is a business, and Facebook is going to act like a business. What can they make money doing? These websites can run ads targeted to you, and they can also take your information if they wanted to and give it to advertisers for them to make ads that are more targeted at you based on what you might like or what you might do in your spare time or what sites you might visit or who you may talk to, things like that. And as I said before, this is all information that we are giving out willingly on social media. So you really, 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 really need to be careful about what you're sharing with people, even if it seems casual, even if it's in a conversation, even if it's a funny status. Just be aware of the fact that it's being collected and used. One of the main pieces to this puzzle is something called big data. So you remember I said that your data is super, super valuable. Now, one of the only things I learned with my useless communications degree, I've said this at least 3 times now, so maybe it's not useless, so I should stop saying that. But anyway, one of the things that we did talk about early on was something called big data.
A Google search, a passport scan, a barcode reading in a supermarket, your online shopping history, an EKG reading, CCTV footage, a photo of a sandwich, a voice message, a tweet. All of these contain data that can be collected, analyzed, and monetized.
All of the information that maps you on the internet. It's like your digital footprint, I guess you could say. And that is how ads are targeted at you. That's the reason why a lot of times these companies say, we're not listening to you, we just know you a little bit better than you know yourself. Because a combination of like websites you visited and vague things that you've been interested in, they can kind of figure out what it is. This has happened to me on so many occasions. This has happened to so many people I know when they're like, oh, I was thinking about getting this thing, and the next thing you know, I saw an ad for it, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes the reason that happens is because you might have, let's say, Googled a question about something. So for example, like I recently got a cat. I was thinking about getting a cat, so I was Googling a lot of stuff about it. So my Instagram ads start kind of being tailored towards that. More videos are recommended to me towards that. I'm being advertised different things towards that. Now, you can also, what I like to do is I have an ad blocker. So 9 times out of 10 when I'm searching, ads are not served to me. So I really don't know how accurate they are, but on my phone, I don't have an ad blocker. So my Instagram ads for me are usually the best way to tell how much they really have on me. And honestly, they're pretty damn accurate. It's all like natural hair products. And yeah, it's all like natural hair products. I also will not write off the possibility that they are listening to us, because I watched a YouTube video recently about how these two people were having a conversation and Alexa picked up certain buzzwords in the background and they ended up calling somebody and sending a recording of the conversation to that person.
Amazon explained that Echo woke up due to a word in background conversation sounding like Alexa, then heard a send message request, at which point Alexa said out loud, to whom the background conversation was interpreted as a name in the customer's contact list.
That's why I don't have Siri turned on my phone. I don't have none of that stuff because I'm not doing that whole Google Home listening thing. They were selling those things for $1. Yeah, so they can come surveil inside your home. I don't think so. I literally, my webcam is covered up right now. That's not a game I'm about to play. Because the algorithm basically knows you better than you know yourself at this point, because you unconsciously Google all sorts of things. You unconsciously like all sorts of things. You unconsciously visit all sorts of websites doing, you know, you're killing time. But I'm just saying not every single thing you do online is an active choice. And because it's not an active choice, the algorithm knows unconsciously what things that you like. Now, this can easily be used against us because, for example, if you are buying a lot of alcohol, visiting a lot of like those kinds of sites, what if they could raise the premium on your car insurance because the data is seeing, okay, a lot of alcohol, drinks a lot, drunk driving, let's raise the premiums. You know what I mean? There's no person to sit there and say, okay, well, maybe this person is planning a party or, you know, works for an event planning service or something like that. There's no person there to kind of like weed through that information to get the context. It's 9 times out of 10, just like kind of automated. There was this one story of this man. We also learned about this in communication. So there you go. Of this man who stormed into Target and he was really, really mad because Target kept sending ads for like baby stuff to his house. And he was like, you're going to encourage my daughter to get pregnant. Why are you sending me this stuff? Which is so weird to do, by the way. It's weird that he did that. But then it turned out that Target predicted that his daughter would be pregnant. And she was like, actually, I'm pregnant, Dad. And he was like, what? And Target knew before he did because they used her data, because she was probably searching things about pregnancy, searching things about kids. And so they were serving her and ads and sending her coupons for that because they knew before he even knew. Now, overall, this documentary is really about how companies are using terms and services agreements, how those types of things are the foundation for a surveillance state here in the US. Like I said, I think it's really disturbing because this came out in 2013. So I don't really know what to say in relation to this in 2020. I think we all know. It's really good to learn about just kind of like what your digital footprint really is, because what we do on the internet now is so different than in 2013. In 2013, social media was big, but it was nothing like it is today. In 2013, we didn't have influencers in the same way. In 2013, YouTube was still a thing, but now we are all so online. Whereas back then it was like most of us were online, but now it's like literally everyone is online constantly. And especially now in 2020, because we are in the middle of a pandemic, we are all at home. Well, no, we're not all at home. We are not all at home. But anyway, because we're all in a pandemic, everyone is online a lot more. And our lives, we're about to have this really, really huge shift and this huge moment where most of our lives are going to exist on the internet. And because of that, we're kind of trading off our own privacy and our own safety for access and to be included on these sites. Now, I'm not about to sit here and tell you quit every single social media site that you've ever used and delete your digital footprint. Though I do dream about doing this every day, and I can tell you right now that one day that is exactly what I plan to do, I think all we can do now is just be very, very smart about what it is that you're posting online. Be very aware of the fact that if you have a business or you make content or you do whatever, make sure that those things live in multiple places. Be aware that these social media apps, be aware that these websites are businesses and they function as such. And you know, their goal is to make money. So you can't be putting your all, don't be pouring your heart out on Twitter, because you never know when that could come back to bite you. Overall, this documentary was very informative. It was also very 2013. It was very of its time. You know, the lower thirds that they used, I'm sorry, but like the little name bugs they had for people looked like the preset one that they got from iMovie. And I was like, I'm gonna need for you all to step it up, because these are very hideous to look at. And I think that this could have been a very long YouTube video. That was kind of the vibe that I got from it, but it was super, super informative. So I'm gonna have to give it 3.5 stars. You know, like it wasn't good enough to be 4, where I was like, this is like cinematically very good, but it was very informative. And I really think that this is essential viewing if you care about your online presence, if you care about your privacy on the internet. Definitely give this documentary a watch, because you need to know what they have access to. Someone that they interviewed, I forget this man's name. He said, if you put a frog in a pot of water and you slowly turn the heat up, it'll die because it won't realize what's going on. If you put a frog in scalding hot water, it'll immediately jump out. He was using that in comparison to what's happening with us and kind of breaking down our walls in terms of what we accept in terms of privacy. And he was 100% right, because 7 years later, we are out there. Especially if you're like my age in your 20s, you've been online since, like I said, since I was a kid. Your whole life exists on the internet and all your information is kind of out there. But as I was saying, I think all we can do is just be very, 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 very mindful of what it is that we post. Be very, very, very mindful of what it is that we say. You know, you just never know who's watching. That sounds so conspiratorial. I sound literally like one of those crazy crackpot conspiracy theorists, but I'm not. I'm just careful. And there's actually evidence to support what I'm saying. I'm not just saying shit just to say it. Like, I've read things, okay? But anyway, terms and conditions may apply. 3.5 stars, but essential viewing, especially in 2020. Watch it, give it a listen, and you know, learn something. As usual, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode.